the Clinton Township Board of Education will please come to order.
Time?
7:36.
7:36. In accordance with the provisions of the New Jersey Open Public Meetings Act, Chapter 231, Laws of 1975, adequate notice of this meeting was provided through the annual public notice on January 9th, 2014. Faxed into three newspapers designated by the board, the Hunterdon Democrat, the Hunterdon Review, and the Express Times. Posting on the district website, the main bulletin board in the administration office, and in each Clinton Township school. And lastly, faxing to the clerk of Clinton Township. Ms. Spitzer, may we please have a roll call?
Ms. Grant?
Here.
Mrs. McLaughlin?
Here.
Mr. Freda?
Present.
Mrs. Hand? Mr. Malloy?
Here.
Mr. McTiernan?
Present.
Mr. Petuto?
Here.
Mr. Sturgis?
Here.
And Mrs. Verderamo?
Here.
Thank you. Mrs. McLaughlin, would you please lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Mr. Malloy, would you serve as process guardian for this evening's meeting?
Yes,
thank
I will.
You. Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the Clinton Township Board of Education meeting. Today is Monday, May 19th, 2014, and this is the monthly meeting of the Clinton Township Board of Education. I just have a few short comments this evening. First, I'd like to ask those board members that have not yet completed the online evaluation of our CSA to please do so no later than tomorrow, which is Tuesday. And also to please, for those board members who have not done so yet, to please complete the online board self-evaluation at the conclusion of business tomorrow as well. The board task list will be sent to you this month via email. There are a couple dates that were still pending, so instead of giving you two pieces of sets of paper, I'll just get it to you in the next couple of days. Lastly, I just wanted to spend a couple of minutes reviewing a topic that will be discussed later this evening under our Policy and Curriculum Committee report. This topic is transportation. During the Policy and Curriculum report, Mrs. McLaughlin, chair of that committee, will move action item 14PC038 and recommend that we vote on the second reading of the Transportation Policy 8600 and Regulation 8600. The major change in that policy and regulation is the elimination of buses traveling down cul-de-sacs that are less than 0.5 miles in length, and to guide those that help construct our bus routes to do so with economies of operation. The 0.5 guideline was recommended to the district by an educational transportation expert. The Policy and Curriculum Committee is proposing this change to our transportation policy and to our regulation for two reasons. First, for safety purposes. We have a letter in hand from the senior pupil transportation specialist from the Office of Student Transportation from the New Jersey Department of Education. In his letter, he states the following. The industry standard that the use of both cul-de-sacs and dead-end streets is not a recommended practice for a number of reasons. He then lists them. First, the limited turnaround space, often making it necessary for buses to back up within cul-de-sacs or dead-end streets. This practice is also discouraged because of its limited visibility from the bus, creates a hazardous situation. He continues by saying possible damage to private property exists, to mailboxes, shrubs, and cars due to the limited turnaround space. Greater inaccessibility in the cul-de-sac or the dead-end street in inclement weather as a result of snow or ice also presented danger to the bus. In addition, the issue of entering the main road from a cul-de-sac or dead-end street is also a topic he brought up because the buses are slow-moving vehicles, especially from a dead stop. Exiting either a cul-de-sac or dead-end street into oncoming traffic may create more hazardous situation than stopping on a main road where the bus is more clearly visible with blinking lights. He concludes by saying, for these reasons, many districts do have a policy to not use cul-de-sacs or dead-end streets for bus stops unless it is absolutely necessary. And his definition of absolutely necessary is IEP-driven in extreme situations. The second reason for the proposal by the Policy and Curriculum Committee is also cited in a letter from the New Jersey DOE transportation expert. He cites that under NJAC 6A:27-9, it states transportation routes shall be arranged so that buses shall traverse highways that serve the largest number of students within a reasonable time limit and at a minimal cost. Now, Clinton Township covers over 30 square miles and has 123 cul-de-sacs and dead ends. We currently have children in 86 of those cul-de-sacs. Currently, district buses go down 15 of those cul-de-sacs. Experts tell us that going down just one cul-de-sac and adding one stop within that cul-de-sac adds 4 more minutes to that route. To potentially go down 87 cul-de-sacs or potentially over 120 cul-de-sacs would become a huge expense to the district. In the fall, the district hired 3 experts in education transportation to help us with our bus routing. Between these gentlemen, there are over 100 years of experience in this particular field. They concur with the comments made by the NJDOE transportation expert and to recommend to us that we do not go down cul-de-sacs or dead-end streets for both safety purposes as well as for economies of operation. In summary, therefore, for both safety and for purposes of economy of operation, the Policy and Curriculum Committee has made their recommendation to change the transportation regulation to reflect no cul-de-sacs. I would like to, however, list and tell you which cul-de-sacs that will not be impacted by this policy: Treeline Road, Chalfont Road, Timber Ridge Road, and Country Place. We will have our buses travel down these cul-de-sacs as a result of either their length or to avoid students walking over railroad tracks or other potentially dangerous obstacles. I will be working with our attorney, Dr. Clark, and members of the Facilities and Finance Committee to establish an appeals process for families that would like their cul-de-sacs considered by the board. One last comment. The letter from the DOE with all of their recommendations can be found on our district website. Those are my comments for this evening, and I'd like to then move on to the report of the superintendent, Dr. Clark. Dr. Clark?
Thank you. The first thing I would like to do is correct a press release that was incorrect, all right, based on the junior solar sprints at our middle school. On Friday, in the regional competition held at Kingwood Middle School, Hakan Salakoglu, yes, took first place, and Andrew Hollenbaugh took second place against 50 other teams in the speed competition of the junior solar sprints. In the special awards category, Andrew earned second place in the engineering category for his car, which he designed and built using his own 3D printer. These two boys have been invited to compete in the intercounty race being held on Wednesday, May 28th at Ridgedale Middle School in Morris County. We will also be taking Patrick Hill and Alistair Wilson because each racer needs someone to catch their car. I do need to ask if in curriculum we could add in a board approval tonight for a field trip on May 28th for those students and their teacher, Lisa Waddell, to go to Ridgedale Middle School in Morris County. Okay. I would also like to introduce a presentation tonight. We've been having different schools and groups come to each of our board meetings to share some of the positive good news that our wonderful kids are doing in the schools along with our wonderful teachers. So tonight, I would like to introduce Patrick McGarren School, whose principal, Mary Postma, is here, and our intern, doing an administrative internship, Kelly DeGioia, is here to present to you some great things that the kids did. They were action research labs related to the American Reading Frameworks and science. So I was really excited when I saw some of these books that our students made. And so we want to share some of what the kids did here tonight so that you would get an idea on the kinds of programs you're approving and the exciting things that our kids are doing.
Thank you, Dr. Clark. Just going to give this a moment.
Is that on?
What we just passed out was the final project done by third graders, mostly.
Kevin, can you give her your microphone, please?
Sorry about that.
This is really pretty awesome.
There we go. Sorry for the technical difficulties. Can everybody hear me okay now?
Yes.
Okay. So, I am here to give you a little information about some really neat things that we've been doing at Patrick McGarren School in second and third grade. Like Dr. Clark said, my name is Kelly DeGioia. I am the art teacher at Patrick McGarren School, but I am also interning with Miss Mary Postma. I just want to thank you all for letting me come here tonight, and I'm really excited to share some of these research projects that we have at PMG. So over the last 2 years, second and third grade have been working with their English and language arts curriculum, and they've been using a program that the Board of Ed actually granted to us generously. It's called the American Reading Company. And we'd like to thank you for that. Through the curriculum, our students have the opportunity to read hundreds of books at their individual reading levels. This year, though, the reading company's research labs have taken our readers to the next level. Focusing on the Common Core state standards, research labs incorporate close reading of complex texts where students gain a strong academic vocabulary, as well as practicing writing and speaking about what they read. Through teacher modeling, classrooms learn step by step how to use text features and how to use those key details to write about their topic. Students get to select their own topics and based on their interests. They use leveled books so that each child can be successful. The second graders focused on insects and bugs, while the third grade studied endangered animals. Throughout the writing process, students learn to utilize graphic organizers, as you can see here. It's a little bit dark, I apologize, but they're using graphic organizers to set the path for their research books while they're using pre-writing and draft writing, all in second grade and third grade. They're doing conferencing with teachers individually so that they can really get a handle on their writing. This is just a picture of one of the pages. They also illustrated, they used diagrams, and they were able to explain physical characteristics and food chains on their topic. So that says, this is a picture of the characteristics of a caterpillar. So this is done by a second grader, and they're using that vocabulary, which is really amazing. Exoskeleton, I think my favorite sentence of this one is, they have a weird life, wasps. When the books were complete, this is just a nice picture of a whole bunch of books piled up in a row. When the books were complete, many of the classrooms held culminating celebrations to acknowledge the students' hard work. We're very proud of the quality of the second and third grade work done by teachers, students, and as they are young, researchers, authors, and illustrators. Thank you very much.
Nice job. These are great.
Yeah. Oh, I've seen this before. He's in a classroom. I loved how excited the kids were about the books themselves. I love that they include terms like glossaries in them, and how so many of the students spoke about that this was not going to be their last book, that they were writers now, and published writers, and they were going to do more. And to me, the most important thing is that they want to read and write and explore more. So I love this program. I love what the kids did and how excited they were. So thank you for sharing it with us tonight.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. It was great.
It's great for the board to get to see, you know, the things that they vote on come to fruition.
I was able to do that well in college.
Maybe somebody wanted to comment. Okay. All right. So, unfortunately, I have to move on to the other business of the superintendent's report. So, our enrollment report is holding steady at 1549. Suspension report, zero. HIV, harassment, intimidation, bullying report. We had one investigation at Round Valley School determined not to be HIV. Do you want to move that? And I just have one more thing to share.
Sure.
Or do you want me to share first?
Actually, I'll move it, then you share.
Okay.
I'm looking for a motion for 14 on action item 14-SU-014.
Motion.
Kevin Malloy.
Second.
Second, Dan. Any questions for Dr. Clark? No? Ms. Spitzer, may we have a roll call?
Mr. Freda?
Yes.
Mrs. Hand?
Yes.
Mr. Malloy?
Yes.
Mr. McTiernan?
Yes.
Mr. Petuto?
Yes.
Mr. Sturgis?
Yes.
Mrs. Verderamo?
Yes.
Mrs. McLaughlin?
Yes.
And Ms. Grant?
Yes.
All yes, motion carries.
I would just like to share with everyone, although I have already shared this with the board, but we had some adventures at Round Valley today. Today we had a report of a possible bear sighting in the vicinity of New York Life next door. What's interesting about this bear sighting is that somehow the story took wings, because what we did is we did a lockout. And parents know that we sent out the standard response protocol from the I Love You Guys Foundation, which is what we follow. And one of the standard response in a situation where there is a possible threat outside the school is something called a lockout. It's also on our website. If you missed it in Friday Facts from your principal, you can reference it there. When we called the lock out and did not have outside dismissal, somehow the story took on a life of its own. And next thing I knew, CBS News was calling, ABC News, CBS News sent a helicopter over the school, which I frankly could not believe that we had a helicopter over the school, and CBS Radio called. So I responded to them all. I explained what a lockout is. And then had a conversation with the county prosecutor's office that maybe we need to educate our reporters on the standard response protocol so they would know the difference between a lockout and a lockdown, which some of them I think confused it with. So it was a very interesting day today. At Round Valley School and the board office. So I just wanted to share that these things catch fire quickly. And we've all heard that if there were a real emergency, social media would take that up very quickly. And we certainly saw an example of that today, and making sure that we get control of the rumor mill as fast as we can by getting out information. So that's why we sent out an alert to everyone, so that you wouldn't turn on the 4 o'clock news this afternoon and see a CBS helicopter over Round Valley School and not know what was going on.
So you're not starting a zoo?
You're not starting a zoo?
No.
Although that helicopter lingered for a long time, so that bear wasn't going anywhere. It was pretty loud for a long time today. Anything else?
No, that's it.
Thank you, Dr. Clark. Moving on to our public comments section, agenda items only. I'd like to open the floor to our first public comments section. To guarantee the fair and orderly expression of an individual, our bylaw 167 limits comments to 3 minutes. We will adhere to this bylaw to allow for everyone to be heard in a fair, consistent, and equitable way. Also, the public comment section is only for comments made by the public. It is not an interactive session between the board and the public. This, too, is defined by our bylaw. No participant may speak more than once on the same topic until all others who wish to speak on that topic have been heard. If you'd like to address the board, please approach the microphone, state your name and address. We'll be limiting this public comment section to 35 minutes.
Hi, Andy Ferguson, Lebanon. Just as a quick comment on Dr. Clark's item right now. In fact, when you put out the lockout announcement, your subject line in the first distribution was locked down. The email that went out, the first one that went out, actually went out with the wrong information. In the subject line, in the body of the message, it said lockout, but it said lockdown in the subject. So you may want to just check on that when it went out for the issue at Rowan Valley today.
Thank you. I didn't put out the subject line, but thank you.
Hi, my name is Angela Medina, and I live on Fawn Ridge Road.
What's her name?
And that was not one of the...
Excuse me, ma'am. I'm sorry. Could you say your name again, please?
Angela Medina.
Medina. Thank you.
So Fawn Ridge wasn't one of the names that you called that was safe, but I would, I didn't understand what you meant by you were going to handle you personally. Mrs. Grant was going to handle anyone who wanted to speak about, can you not hear me? You want to speak speak to you about our particular situation with our bus stop?
We'll put together an appeals process and then you'll be able to
to talk to us about
and we'll
that.
Get out an email? You'll send us an
Absolutely.
Email? Absolutely. Okay, because on our particular bus stop, even though it's our cul-de-sac is very wide, plenty of room for a bus to go around, the issue with our particular stop is that it's downhill on a curve, and I would never stop a car or a bus or anything because of just how it's situated downhill on a curve. It's a blind curve, so when you have a bus stopped right there, it's a sitting duck, and at least when the bus pulls out from there, it has the chance to look to see if cars are coming. The other way, you don't see the bus until you're almost on top of it. So anyone coming down that street when the bus has been stopped and are letting people on, you know, it's a main road, it's Route 629, then they don't see the bus until they're right there and they could possibly hit the bus. So that's why I think someone from the board should drive our bus stop and see how it's different in that respect.
Okay. Thank you.
Mark McManus, 16 Twin Oaks Lane, Annandale. In regards to the passage of 8600, I mean, I would like to appeal to the board to say that, you know, we're talking about less than 10% of the cul-de-sacs in the town that buses were going down the cul-de-sacs. I do not believe that it was done, you know, willy-nilly to these particular cul-de-sacs were put out there. I strongly believe there was some reason as to why it was done. I will have a letter next week for the board from the postal service, from the postmaster, where on Lilac, from Payne Road to River Road, the mailboxes are only on the one side of the road for, it was originally set up for safety reasons, so that the postal truck did not have to stop on both sides of the road. Putting kids on the intersection of Twin Oaks and Lilac, having them stand on Lilac in the center of a blind turn in the morning during rush hour, I believe is ludicrous. And I will have that letter next week for it. Unfortunately, they did not get it to me in time. Thank you.
Thank you.
My name's Heather Turco. I'm with the Work Family Connection. This is regarding action item 14FF207. We're pleased to make the donation of the picnic tables, the plaque, and the garden plantings at the Patrick McGarren School. This donation is on behalf of Miss Barbara Melville, which I'm not sure if you're aware is one of our staff members that passed away this past November. Her loss was greatly felt by all of her students, families, the school, and of course our organization. I hired Miss Barbara myself 10 years ago, and she was just a wonderful lady. So we contacted Ms. Posma to try to figure out something we could do to remember her and to help the healing with the students and our families. And that's why we are doing the picnic tables every year. Ms. Barbara would plant flowers around the school. So we're hoping the picnic tables and the garden plantings in the courtyard will bring a little bit of healing and peace to all the kids, and they can go out there and remember her. So I just want to, you know, I hope that you'll approve that. We plan on having a ribbon cutting ceremony in June. We're going to send out invitations. You're all welcome to attend. Our students and families are going to come. But that was it. Thank you.
Thank you.
Claudia Shore, Lebanon, New Jersey. I also am on Fawn Ridge Road, and I also just want to have it noted there that I'd like to appeal that the bus should come down that specific cul-de-sac. And I know it was noted that for extreme situations there can be an appeal, and I'd like to say that in the past the bus did come down our street, and it was found by the police department in Clinton Township that it was an unsafe stop on County Road 629 because of the blind turns, because it's an unsafe spot for children to stand there. Not only do they, our children were asked to stand there, but it was also, we were asked to cross that county road. And years ago, like I said, the Clinton Township Department drove it, and the bus stop was moved down to the cul-de-sac because it was determined it was an unsafe location. Thank you.
Thank you. Would anyone else like to address the board?
I'm Jeremy Mormon, Kent Court, Annandale.
Excuse me, sir. I'm sorry. This is not working well this evening. I apologize.
It's Jeremy Mormon, Kent Court. I live on a cul-de-sac, but I wanted to add a comment related to this that's maybe a bit different. This issue, I think, is crucially important for the families who are affected by this. But it struck me as very strange that we got a very kind email from Dr. Clark last week inviting us to this board meeting, the public to this board meeting. But it seems strange to me that what kind of goes for public democracy and education is related to buses going up and down cul-de-sacs when we are in the greatest age of change in American education, and I don't even think the public realizes that. You know, we have kindergartners being tested with standardized tests, and you know, these are the kind of issues that we're invited to talk about while everything else is just, well, the change is coming, get used to it, and that's the message that we hear. I just wanted to add that. I know it's not directly related, but the contrast sort of struck me as sort of characteristic of the educational age we live in. Thanks.
Anyone else like to address the board?
Good evening, I'm Cindy Ashby, 8 Country Place, and I just wanted to clarify, your regulation guide says very clearly in bold that the buses will not travel down cul-de-sacs. Cul-de-sacs longer than a half mile may be considered, but at the beginning of this meeting, you stated, I think, 4 streets that will not be impacted. Am I understanding you right that that is certain, or is that just being talked about right now, but it's subject to change?
No, it's certain.
It is certain. Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you.
Hi, I'm Pam Beswick. I live on 18 Country Place, and I'm very happy that my street is one of the ones that is considered safe and that it will have buses coming up it. But I just want to speak for a second for some of the other cul-de-sacs that might not have that opportunity. I just wanted to say that I think while Mrs. Grant's points were very good and valid about the safety of driving into the cul-de-sacs, I think there's a lot of other points as well to consider. For example, Fawn Ridge, I know that road is on 629 as my street is too. And I would not want children standing there. So if your point about it's not safe for the buses to turn out onto a road, then in my opinion, it shouldn't be safe for children to stand there and wait for a bus either. There's also points about safety of the streets, if there's sidewalks, safe places to wait. I know there's other smaller cul-de-sacs that have steep inclines like our street does, where I know when I'm coming down there in the winter on an icy day, it's difficult to stop, and so that should be a consideration as well. So I guess my point was, as this policy is stated now, it looks like distance is the only factor for considering whether or not the the it's bolded in it. It says it in the cul-de-sac. It says that's cul-de-sacs will not be traveled. And there's the only consideration is the distance.
The section is where it's changed.
Okay, is there going to be something that says there'll be other considerations as well?
It doesn't. Yeah, if you look at the policy, there's factors to be considered, and there are a number of different factors. Tree line and timber ridge have other factors that aren't related to the length of them.
Okay.
It has to do with other...
Do you want me to read them?
Yeah.
There's five provisions. A is factors to be considered.
Yeah.
The distance to be traveled to and from school. B is the age and state of the health of the child. C, the requirements of the instructional program. D, the hazards involved on the route to be traveled. Mm-hmm. And E, the economy of operations.
Okay, I was referring to that line item C, where it says cul-de-sacs will not be traveled, and when I was reading it, I didn't see the link between
the change in the policy.
Right, but when I was reading it, I didn't see the link between, and I just would hate for, future boards to misinterpret it as I did. So I just wanted to clarify that statement C, that there will be indeed other factors considered, not just the length of the cul-de-sac.
Ronell Reckon, Lilac Drive. I have a very quick question.
I'm sorry, ma'am.
Ronell Reckon, 74 Lilac. I just have a very quick question because I missed the cul-de-sacs that you guys mentioned. I have Tree Line, County Bliss, Timber Ridge, and I missed the second one.
Chalfont. Chalfont.
C-H-A-L-F-O-N-T-E. Thank you. That's all I needed. Thanks.
Anyone else like to address the board? Okay, seeing none, I would like to open the floor to our first recognition of the public. This section is for members of the public to express themselves on school matters of community interest. We'll follow the same outline for the first public comment section on agenda items only. If you'd like to address the board, again, please state your name and address. We'll be limiting this public comment section to 15 minutes.
Lana Brennan, 21 Fawn Drive. I'm asking the board tonight to look into possibly using another busing company for next year. I have stood in front of this board before having safety issues and yet again have more. First off, I want to say that my kids and I adore our driver. She's wonderful and great. I am upset that this company is sending her out in a bus not meeting state requirement. For the last few weeks or so, our bus has been missing its yellow safety guard. Previous to that, it was tied down so that it could not move. While my stops happen to be on the door side of the bus, I have an issue that this guard is gone. There's a reason it is on the bus, especially being a parent to smaller and younger children who ride that bus and are barely as tall as the wheels. Next, I am becoming quite wary of substitute bus drivers. While our bus has not had an issue, I have had a friend's daughter on for almost 40 extra minutes because the bus was lost. I have also observed today and last Thursday lost buses in my neighborhood. While I understand that having a sub adds some time on, I am concerned at how they are driving. Both drivers I have seen were holding up what I assume to be directions in front of their face while driving. To me, this is extremely unsafe. When parents put their kids on the bus, there is a certain expectation that the child will be on a safe vehicle and also arrive at school on time. Traffic and weather are to be understood. However, having a bus company that does not have safety first is not. Your prompt consideration to this matter would be greatly appreciated. I will be checking back in 30 days. Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else like to address the board?
Cindy Ashby, 8 Country Place. I would just like to support this other parent who spoke. I didn't think about it until she mentioned it, but we are how many months into the school year? Actually, almost at the end of our school year, and our bus driver still forgets to stop at my kid's stop, either in the morning or after school. My son tells me that the drivers often get lost or forget to hit one of the roads on their route. We also do have substitute drivers. My kids tell me how mean the drivers are, and I know that sometimes kids can be unruly, and especially in the afternoon when they're coming home. They've got all this pent-up energy. If they have not been able to get outside for recess, it's even worse, and I get that. But the drivers, the way that they are speaking to some of the kids, and I'm just hearing this from my own children, is concerning to me. And there are things going on the bus, whether kids are eating, they are playing with things they shouldn't be playing with, they are using their cell phones, all the things that my kids tell me are not allowed on the bus are being done on the bus, and the drivers apparently aren't doing anything about it. If the rules are in place for certain things to be allowed or not allowed on the bus, they ought to be enforced, just for the safety of the other kids and the driver, and for distracted drivers. I have a commercial driver's license. I understand the need to keep your eyes on the road at all times and to have the bus be, you know, the people on the bus be under a controlled environment as much as possible. But it's very chaotic on our bus route at Country Place. So I just wanted to support this other parent because I noticed a big change in the bus company this year compared to the 2 years that we lived here before. My kids liked their driver. It was always the same guy or gal. And now it seems to be very shifting and very unstable and not a pleasant ride for my kids. Thank you.
Thank you.
Which school is the bus being asked to go?
I know.
Mark Manis, 16 Twin Oaks Lane. I just wanted to acknowledge the presentation that was put on as a parent of a third grader. My son had a blast, you know, and I thank the board for, you know, putting that program forward. You know, he loves having his book, and as you guys had all seen, you know, it's a hard-covered book, and, you know, it stands up on his desktop. You know, he's very proud of it, and, you know, all the research and stuff that went into it. You know, it was a great program. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else like to address the board? Okay, seeing none, I'd like to move on to the report of our business administrator, Mrs. Spitzer.
Our next Board of Education meeting will be held here on Monday, June 23rd at 7:30 p.m. We did receive a letter of correspondence from the Township Planning Board Administrator thanking us for our presentation before them, identifying capital projects that will be that are being considered at Spruce Run, Patrick McGarren, Round Valley, and Clinton Township Middle School. Our engineer did go before the board, the planning board, on May the 5th, when we did have another Board of Education meeting. The Township Committee voted on a motion by Mr. Millay and seconded by Mr. Semay that the capital projects were consistent with the Township Master Plan. Before you tonight also are the approvals for the minutes for April the 28th and May the 5th, as well as the executive session minutes for April the 28th and May the 5th. In addition to that, you will have the line item transfers as recommended by the superintendent for the month of March, the board secretaries and treasurer's reports for the month of March, and please note that no line items have been, we're in compliance and that no line items have been over encumbered.
Is that your report?
Yes.
Thank you. I'm looking for a motion on 14-BA-30 through 14-BA-33.
Motion.
Megan?
Second.
Second, Mr. McTiernan. Any questions for Mrs. Spitzer by the board?
I have a clarification question. For the executive session minutes, on May 5th. I only stayed for part of the session, so should I abstain from the whole thing?
Yes, please.
Okay.
Yeah, I've got a question. The minutes for May 5th, FF172, that was the fair funding legislation motion. I don't recall what happened in the meeting, but in there it says that Mr. Freda and Mr. Sturgis abstained. I thought they voted no. Just checking on that.
No, I abstained. I abstained.
Okay.
I think I did too. My recollection.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Any other questions for Mrs. Spitzer, please? No? Seeing none, Mrs. Spitzer, may we have a roll call?
Mr. Freda?
Yes.
Mrs. Hand?
Yes.
Mr. Malloy?
Abstain, April 28th minutes, BA030, yes to all others.
Would you repeat that, please? I'm
abstain
sorry.
From minutes on April 28th on BA030.
Okay.
Yes to all others.
Thank you. Mr. McTiernan?
Yes.
Mr. Pattudo?
Yes.
Mr. Sturgis?
Yes.
Mrs. Verderamo?
I have to abstain on BA030 for the executive sessions on the 28th and May 5th, but yes on the rest. I wasn't here on the 28th. Thank you.
I've given
birth. Sorry. I don't know how I
could forget
that. Some people
say anything.
Mrs. McLaughlin?
Yes to all except action 14BA030, the executive session. I'm going to abstain from both.
And Ms. Grant?
Yes.
Oh, yes, motion carries.
Okay, moving on to the committee reports, we'll go to our Facilities and Finance Committee. Mr. Kevin Malloy is our chairperson. Mr. Malloy, would you please give us your report?
Thank you, Ms. Grant. Yes, the Facilities and Finance Committee met briefly on May the 12th, a week ago last. We discussed various items, most of which you'll see before you tonight. First things first, again, if you'll note on the action item regarding the donation from Work Family Connection in honor of Mrs. Melville. I just want to say thank you again. For those who are not aware, Mrs. Melville passed away last November, and she ran before and aftercare programs. And while my own children were not in those aftercare programs, every parent I've ever spoken to really had nothing to say but wonderful things about it. And I know our community was hit pretty hard by her loss. And just again, a very big thanks for that gracious donation. Items tonight are more or less routine finance and facilities items. The payment of bills, outstanding, we can't get around that. Item 193, professional development items for our educators in 194, 5, and 6. There is the payment on, if you look at item 198 on security cameras, the payment to ASG Security. Item 197 is a motion for the approval of an extended school year pre-K and self-contained autism class to be held July 1st through 31st. One item for service providers, item 199 is a recommendation of the Finance and Facilities Committee to appoint a new property and casualty insurance agent of record. That agent is Centrix. They are a New Jersey-based, I believe it's Basking Ridge, based insurance broker that specializes in serving the needs of public educational institutions. This is not an immediate impact on our program schematics or cost, coverage limits, et cetera, but what it does do, it gives us a little bit more of what I would describe as an advocate on our behalf with regards to the management of our existing program, which can cover anything from something as simple as making sure that certificates of insurance are being well managed by our outside vendors, up to and including claims negotiation with our carriers. That's pretty important, as we all found out with the barn last year and this year. So item 200 is a change in our application for an IDEA grant. Items 201 through 206 are related to compliance for IEP students with IEPs. These are, as we've talked about at various previous meetings, these are things that we must do as a district to comply with the educational needs of all of our students. The last item, and I'll ask Mrs. Spitzer to please elaborate on this. The last item that I'd like to discuss is there is one motion item for dual transportation according to the existing transportation guidelines of the board for dual residents. And perhaps, Mrs. Spitzer, if you could sort of give us the thumbnail on that so everybody can sort of clarify what that means. That's correct, 208.
dual residence is a situation where a student may have, parents may have joint custody of a student if both parents live within the district. As long as we have a seat on the bus for the entire year, the student may be assigned to different bus routes and different stops for different days of the week.
So that's just to make sure that that child is getting to school and is consistent with our guidelines. So those are the highlights. So with that, I seek a motion on 16 items. 14 FF 193 through 14 FF 208.
Mr. McTiernan?
I'll second.
Megan, second. Any questions for Mr. Malloy from the board?
Yes, I'm not sure this is for Mr. Malloy, but it's on action item 14 FF 208, the dual residency. How is it that we ensure that the student is on the proper bus and is not missing? In other words, if you're to be on bus A on one day and you're not there, you're on bus B instead. How do we coordinate that and ensure that we're aware where the student is and is not subject to some type of a loss or getting off at the wrong stop?
Great question. And I'll let Mrs. Spitzer, again, sort of push me back onto the monorail if I go off. But I believe the parents will let the schools know ahead of time where they expect the child to be. There is more or less a somewhat set schedule. But what you will find is, for example, parental notification. For example, if my child is going to be picked up, we send notes ahead of time. And the building administrators do notify the bus companies.
And one other thing to elaborate on that, Mr. Malloy, is that for these particular students, there is an application that needs to be notarized by each of the parents to ensure that we are abiding by any agreements that they may have. And it is managed out of the front offices in each of the schools to ensure that the student is where they need to be when they're supposed to be there. So board approves dual residencies on a case-by-case basis as they happen. It's not as simple as...
Correct me if I'm wrong, Mrs. Spitzer, forgive me, Dan, but the bus drivers have a list of students that are going to be on their bus each
Absolutely.
Day, and we count noses.
That is correct.
So operationally, then, we do something as the student gets on the bus to assure that they're on the right bus per the permissions for that day?
That is being handled out of the front offices where the students... Yes, it's not handled out of the business office or transportation. We notify them that the agreement has been approved and what the status of that agreement is and what buses they're on, and then the secretaries and administrators in those buildings manage the students.
Additional questions. And I ask this every year. FF 202, FF 204, these are both for special ed. And they're at tuition rates that to me are extraordinary as represented in newspapers, et cetera. The cost for tuition for each student, and I'm sure that as we go through the year, there'll be more than these two students, but it's $85,000 plus transportation. So we're expended as a township $100,000 plus per student to go to these schools. This is not necessarily for facilities and finance, but for our administrators. As I know, we're not to know who the students are as a board. What is it that's being done to assure that the students are receiving the benefit that we're paying? And where my concern comes in is that it's nice to send the student off to a facility. What is it that we get as a report, or how does our administration assure that the student is receiving the care and the education that they're going to the special education specialist, if I can word it that way?
Mr. McTiernan, if you don't mind, I'll answer. We have a procedure in place that our child study team evaluates the program on a regular basis that the student is receiving to make sure they're receiving all of the services that they are required to get by their individual educational plan. Our director of special services also visits each of those out-of-district schools on a regular basis and checks, goes into the classroom, observes the student, makes sure that they're getting the checklist that of requirements. So we do have a process in place, and we evaluate that regularly, whether or not that program is correct or not. And that's pretty much evidenced by the fact that we do bring children back within district as it becomes their least restrictive environment, as that changes for every student.
Do we evaluate these schools and their competitors to see which of the schools is delivering the best product?
Well, we look at each school based on the student needs. Different schools provide different programs that are suitable to different types of student needs. So we have lists of them, and we utilize county-approved schools and state-approved schools as well. So they have to be certified the correct term? Approved would be the correct term, sorry. That we use those schools so that their curriculum and such is correct and aligned with standards.
Follow up on Dan, just for the record, are all these budgeted for? 201, 202, 203, 204, are they budgeted for? 201, 202, 203, 204, I guess Dan spoke them. Are they budgeted for? Are they, for the record?
This is correct. These are budgeted for the 14-15 school year. So what you're starting to see is contracts for the upcoming school year. So yes, they are budgeted for in all of these situations.
14-15.
That's correct.
Even though it's in this.
Yes, because they start by the end of June. Okay. So we try to get everything on in advance.
Just want to get it for the record. Thank you.
Any other questions?
I don't have a question as much as a comment on the FF207. I think it's great that Ms. Barbara is being honored at Patrick McGarren. I think that knowing her personally, that this is just a beautiful thing for her and her family. So I think this is, you know, really great.
Anyone else? Ms. Spitzer, can we have a roll call vote, please?
Mr. Freda?
Yes.
Mrs. Hand?
I need to abstain on 193 and yes to the rest.
Mr. Malloy?
Yes.
Mr. McTiernan?
Yes.
Mr. Petuto?
Yes.
Mr. Sturgis?
Yes.
Mrs. Verderamo?
Yes.
Mrs. McLaughlin?
Yes.
And Ms. Grant?
Yes.
All yes, motion carries.
Moving on to our Personnel Negotiations Committee. Mr. Dan McTiernan is our chair. Mr. McTiernan, can you give your committee report, please?
Certainly. We have 16 items here for approval. It's important to note that all personnel selections follow the policies and practices of the board. We have one salary correction. It's important to note that that is not payroll impacting. That's an administrative correction from a previous summation of the meeting. Am I correct on that?
Mm-hmm.
So there was no impact on the individual's salary. We're also approving the VA salary per the contract that we approved last month. 218 through 222 are the extended school year staffing approvals, which begin early in June. Is it early or mid-June? Oh, July
1st.
It was a J money. Also, it's important to note, just bring it to the board's attention, the public's attention, items 227 through 231. These are the approvals for the CTAA, the administrators, and also the unaffiliated staff contracts. The CTAA is a three-year contract. The non-affiliated staff is the 13-14 school year and the 14-15 school year inclusive in here. We started the negotiations in regarding to all of our contracts in February of the year 2013. We reached a memorandum of agreement with our largest union in August of that year, and it appeared that we would definitely become to an agreement that would be voted on and approved ideally in the month of December, which did not happen. That agreement was moved forward to the membership of the CTEA in February. It was not approved, and the board on April 16th was notified of that non-approval. It is the board's decision that we are close to agreement, and all of these contracts were interrelated in the month of December, that we would not hold back on the CTAA and non-affiliated staff agreements for the years 2013 and 14 and 14 and 15. So we elected to move forward. It is important to note the CTEA contract does remain in negotiations. Next meeting is scheduled for June 5th. But at this time, we do have the contracts completed. They have been approved by the membership of the CTAA. The non-affiliated staff does not have to approve those. It just has to follow the guidelines that were established. So with that, I put items P PN 216 through 231 up for your review and approval.
Looking for a motion, please?
Motion.
Kevin. Second?
Second.
Gina. Sam. Any questions for Mr. McTiernan this evening?
I have a question. Is there any board member that's not going to drink their water that could give it to me?
Sorry.
Is there anyone who's not going to drink their water?
Right.
Thank you.
Sorry, I don't think that falls in the guidelines of questions.
You can vote on that?
Yeah, I was going to say, wow, is that a...
Is that a friendly amendment to... Any legitimate questions from Mr. McTiernan, please?
Any appropriate questions?
Seeing none, may we please have a roll call vote?
Mr. Freda?
Yes.
Mrs. Hand?
Yes.
Mr. Malloy?
Yes.
Mr. McTiernan?
Yes.
Mr. Petuto?
Yes.
Mr. Sturgis?
Yes.
Mrs. Verderamo?
Yes, except no on PN 227 and PN 228.
Yes, abstain.
And now we're on 227 and 228?
Yes.
Thank you. Mrs. McLaughlin?
Yes.
And Ms. Grant?
Yes.
Motion carries.
Okay, moving on to our third committee report of the evening, our Policy and Curriculum Committee. Ms. Rachel McLaughlin is chair of that committee.
I apologize if I lose my voice during this. I have really bad allergies tonight. The Policy and Curriculum Committee met on May 6th for an extended period of time. We spent a good portion of the evening discussing policies. Before you tonight, you will see a variety of policies. You should have received them all in your board packet. There are 9 new policies for first reading, and we have 4 policies up for second reading. I just wanted to highlight some of the things and language changes for the initial first reading policies tonight. Board member number and term, just to remind you, we have 9 members of our board that are elected by 3-year terms. And we removed some language about regional school districts because we are not a regional school district, although we do send to a regional school district our 8th graders for high school. The rest of the policies reflect minor language changes. The professional policy number 3240, professional development of teachers and school leaders. There is a change in language to now request that teachers who would like time off or to be reimbursed for professional development need to do so within 10 working days. There is a policy also that is new under that provision that people that we hire for interim positions must also complete the professional development required. Previously, if they were interim, they did not have to complete the professional development, so that is a change. Outside activities, support staff members, policy number 4230, staff members cannot take students on trips without board permission. Previously, they were referred to as pupils. We're changing the language to students. This also reflects that if a staff member were to take a student on a trip without permission, that the board would not be liable for this. A highlight of policy, our regulation 3240, professional development for teachers and school leaders, is that teachers are required to have 20 hours per year of professional development. Those are the highlights for the first readings. If you read through the first readings and you have additional comments, the Policy and Curriculum Committee will be meeting before the next board meeting on June 23rd, so you can send any comments, corrections to language to me. For second readings tonight, we have a policy on special education and receiving schools, our transportation policy, which we've highlighted earlier, and the regulation for transportation. Just to review, a change to language would be that we would not, just for the public clarification, the exemptions to the cul-de-sac policy would be Tree Line Road, Chalfont Drive, I believe not Road, Timber Place, and Country Place. In addition,
Timber Ridge.
Timber Ridge, sorry. Timber Ridge. In addition, the policies should be updated on our website, so if the public wanted to peruse them. Anything that's bolded means that there's a language change. So, for example, a policy that I highlighted earlier was that previously they were referred to as pupils, and it's been crossed out and it now says students. So when you're reading policies online, you should be able to see what are the changes that we are proposing. We also have some field trips that we're going to be approving tonight. The peer leaders from Clinton Township Middle School will be going and visiting the, well, it looks like they already visited the Lebanon Borough School. Today, the sixth graders had a field trip to the middle school. On June 4th, the eighth graders are going to the Branchburg Sports Complex for their eighth grade field trip. I believe that this is the field trip that is paid for by the proceeds of the penny auction in seventh grade. June 6th, Eyes of the Wild is a program that will be coming to Spruce Run School. It's an in-district program for kindergartners. In addition, Dr. Clark highlighted earlier, they'd like to make an amendment to the field trip list tonight, a friendly amendment, to include a May 28th, 2014 field trip to the Ridgedale Middle School for the inter-county finals of the solar panel competition for four students, as well as their teacher, Lisa Waddell. With that being said, I'd like to move action items 14 PC037 through 14 PC039.
So moved.
I'll second.
And can I ask for clarification from our council, please? Ms. McLaughlin asked for a friendly, but we haven't moved it yet, first or second it. So is it a friendly or is it just an amendment and then we accept the amendment through the motion?
You can do the latter.
Can do the latter. Okay, so we don't need a friendly amendment.
Okay.
So we're looking for a motion, please. Have you got it?
Mr.
Okay, and second?
Yeah. Mr. Sturgis and Mrs. Bertarano.
Okay, very good. Any questions for Mrs. McLaughlin?
Yes, I have a question for actually to both you, Rachel, and you, Ms. Grant. Regarding transportation, 8600, and regarding some of the folks spoke tonight about the appeals process. Is the appeals process formalized?
No, it's not formalized yet.
Should then the appeals process be formalized? I think the entire board should have a process.
Absolutely.
In that case, I would suggest or ask that we table adoption of second reading until the appeals process can be looked at by the full board and reviewed as a part of the policy and guidelines on 8600.
I think it should be a separate policy.
Yeah.
I think they're tied.
They can be tied and we can go through a first and second again, but I think for purposes of getting our routing started for next year, we need to vote on it as a second reading this evening, and then the appeals process is something we need to add to that policy, and we can bring it to the board in a pretty short term.
Can we get clarity from our board attorney? Is it standard practice to have a separate matter of appealing?
There's no right or wrong way to go about it. That's board preference.
I'm just curious if whether or not a formalized appeal policy may or may not change the minds of some of my fellow board members as we think about taking the second reading and putting it into policy with our vote tonight.
I don't know if it's going to change my mind, but you make a valid point about the appeals. I'm not really too comfortable with the appeals process, and I don't know how it really goes down or what it consists of. I'm pretty set in my vote, but to dot the I's and cross the T's, I'll give Mr. Melissen due diligence here. Maybe we as a board should consider that, because the appeal process, I'm not very comfortable with it. And I don't really know too much about it as it would relate to this.
Well, it's my understanding that the appeals process is still a work in progress.
That's right.
There's nothing final, and yet we're going to vote on something. Again, it's not going to change my vote, but
In the way I see it is the appeal process doesn't change the direction that this policy indicates, okay? The appeals process will allow us to provide the public an opportunity to come and speak about their particular situation. So it's almost two separate things that the board will get to talk about the appeals process, and then we can all discuss it together, develop the appeals process, and then vote on it.
It's an open forum, the appeal process?
Sure. We've done it in the past in facilities and finance.
We have. Okay, so, understanding and noted, and understanding the point that you want to move forward with routing because we do need to have our routing done early, but wouldn't an appeal theoretically change routing after the fact anyhow?
It would change routing perhaps for one or two cul-de-sacs, not for potentially 87 or more.
Okay. When do we expect to have something on an appeal that the board can review in terms of how appeals are reviewed, steps taken, factors considered, whether they'll be in PNN, whether they'll be in FNF, whether they'll be before the full board? Do we have a...
I can start, you know, putting together a plan with counsel, with Dr. Clark, and get back to you. I can't tell you 30 days from now.
No, I understand. I also think that it's probably beneficial to those who are planning appeals,
sure,
to understand what steps there are so they can prepare,
sure,
effectively to make their appeal.
Yeah.
It would seem that the appeals process needs to be in place on or before, preferably before, any changes are made to the current bus routes, so that once the changes are made and I'm notified as a parent and I want to appeal, that I now can go to that process.
Well, that would be my preference as well. That there is an appeals process in place, so parents understand.
Yeah.
If they look at this and go, okay, my street's not of one of the four listed, so I'd like to appeal. What are the steps? So, actually, this would really be directed first at you, Ms. McLaughlin, that I'd recommend potentially tabling the adoption of second reading until we have an appeals process in place as a part of 8600 or in addition to 8600. But it's my understanding that if Mrs. McLaughlin, as head of the committee, accepts this, then it would be up to you, Mr. Sturgis, and you, Ms. Verderamo, as the motion and seconder as to whether or not that would be accepted on a friendly.
I would accept it. I would entertain that idea. I actually didn't think we were voting on this tonight. I thought we were going to hear the comment and then vote on it subsequently. But after hearing you speak about it, I would prefer to have the appeals process more finalized myself. But I would ask Mrs. Spitzer, as far as routing goes, when do you need to get started on routing?
We are currently already starting on routing. Parents should be notified by the end of July, early August, if we can get it done. We were challenged with that last year with the changing.
So we want to notify them of stop times, bus numbers, by early July. So
I don't know that it'll be early July. My goal would be end of July, mid-August at the latest.
So then if we were going to do an appeals process, we would want to have that done and allow them time to appeal prior to the buses running in September. So like August.
Correct. That potentially could change all of the bus routes. So if there was a way to do it before we actually develop the routes, that would be helpful as well.
If you're talking about a policy, making the appeals process a policy, you have to have two readings. Mm-hmm. That brings you at the earliest.
To July.
All right.
July.
It brings you to the end of July, which would postpone the routing process till the end of July. Is it possible that it's not a policy? Is there some other way we can do it?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I think it does need to be
a formal
formalized
policy
in some way. It could be a regulation.
Policy or regulation, it has to have two readings. So that brings you to the end of July, which makes it very difficult to do routing. I don't know how you do routing.
To be clear, I'm not trying to gum up the routing works here, and I understand the time concerns, but I do think that really less for the board and more for the parents who are planning an appeal, that they should understand what's required of them and what is expected of those who are going to be. I mean, we don't know who would be hearing appeals. So I think that we should, again, I just want to make sure that we're doing this as completely as possible.
Are we making a mountain out of a molehill?
I'm not sure it's a good idea to have a policy in place with no appeal process in place.
Well, are we making a mountain out of a molehill?
No.
I'm going to use Country Place as an example because we know the bus is going up it. Let's assume that the bus didn't go up Country Place. It stopped somewhere else and these parents wanted to appeal that. And the routing in July, what the parents are going to know is that their child is on bus 75. And its stop is at this particular location. I now want to appeal that. That's not going to change the routing on the buses, is it?
Unless
the
appeal is successful.
Accepted.
But then in which case it changed the routing of the
bus.
The
My child is still on the same bus, am I correct? It's just, where does the bus stop? Is it only stopping, in this case, because I know that street, sorry. Mm-hmm. Is it only stopping at 629 and Country Place? And my appeal is going to be, I want it not only to stop at 629 and Country Place, but I want it to come up my cul-de-sac and stop two times, three times, whatever that is. So that should not affect
what it will impact. Change is it will affect the times for the other students on the bus. And that will have already been publicized
what if,
as well.
I have an idea.
So you can do the route.
What if we put, what if you did some additional wording in the current regulation that you have that adds in a statement that there will be an appeals process designed by the board and superintendent, or you know, the could be the policy committee and the superintendent, however you want to word it, that you add in a line like that, that there will be an appeals process to be determined, all right? And that puts the appeals process in place, that you have it in your regulation, that you will have an appeals process, and then the policy committee or whatever formalizes how exactly that appeals process
so
will work.
I appreciate that. My point to that would probably be that you don't have an appeals process in place. You have a commitment to have an appeals process in place.
Is it a process in place, or are you looking for considerations of the appeal? Because the appeal process is come up to the microphone and explain why you think there should be an exception. If you're trying to expand that, it's not the process that you're looking at. It's the considerations in the policy that would result in an exception. I think that's what I hear you're asking for.
Yes and no. I think that I think that it's sort of a well-constructed way to appeal a decision based on PNN or the full board should have parameters. You can reference back to consideration, but I think there are alternative considerations. You know, for example, I'll use the example of Fawn Ridge and Twin Oaks. You know, I've lived here 10 years. My first, I think that, you know, for example, I did not know that the Clinton Township Police Department pointed out to a prior board of education or to the bus company that they didn't believe it was a good idea. I think those types of events, I mean, supporting documentation, things like that, what's good, what's not. I think strictly a baldly emotional appeal doesn't work for me. You know what I mean? I'm just wondering, somebody, if there's going to be an appeal, I think somebody should be able to provide something more than a petition or some documentation.
In the appeals process that you have, you know, police authorization, and the reason I'm asking that question is, I think many of the parents out here would come up with considerations that as smart as we on the board may be, we might not anticipate. So it's the process would be is how do you make an appeal as opposed to what are the considerations? I would think that the appeal, the person making the appeal, would come up with the argument or the rationalization with the supporting documentation as to why, use Fawn Ridge as an example, in their estimation should be an exception to it. I don't think the board or anybody should be constructing what all the considerations should be. That should be left wide open for the author to create.
But isn't that why we have public comment, for them to come out and inform us and let us know this? So I'm devil's advocate here, but so to Dan's point, we give them opportunities, the taxpayers and the citizens, to come out here during the topic and express their concerns and say, this is why you should consider my street as well.
Correct.
No disrespect to those who spoke, but we've given them a lot of opportunities to come out, and if we don't, obviously we didn't change anything during that time. So I hear what you're saying, and you're making a good point too. So where do we stop? We say, okay, we're going to continue with appeals. We're going to say, this is why you come to these meetings to speak and communicate to us, and then we will consider it. What do we do?
I think the language is pretty clear because it's already saying that whenever possible, buses will not travel down cul-de-sacs. So it allows for there to be exceptions. It's assumed that there will be an exception, that there could be possibly an exception, depending on one of the considerations that are already listed.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, I understand your point, but there were a lot of parents here who felt that the policy wasn't clear. So, to the point of an appeal, the timing, things like that. How much time do I have to file an appeal? How timely is the decision?
All of those things are things we can work through. I don't think anybody's defined the process yet. It's just to provide somebody an opportunity to officially approach the board on what they think about their particular cul-de-sac.
Understood, which takes me to our original point. I would be much more comfortable with some outline of a process, even if it's simply as far as you will speak to PNN or you will speak to the full board or you will have this many days from the filing of an appeal to have your appeal heard. You will have this many days from the date of the appeal hearing to have the decision rendered. Things of that nature are the types of things that I would be much more comfortable seeing as policy attendant to the changes in transportation.
Didn't we discuss the appeals kind of touch upon that at our last meeting?
We talked about it, right?
So yep. Kevin, did you not realize that we were going to, that when we were doing
Oh, I knew that, exactly that we were going to be voting on this, but.
No, but when we were talking about it at the last meeting and you came up with these questions that you have now, that there's a time constraint on it, did you think about it then at that meeting too, or no? It was just.
It's something I've been thinking about since last meeting and this present meeting.
Oh.
That's a valid point, but Dan makes, again, I'm going back, that's why we have two readings and two opportunities for the taxpayers to come up and express themselves and tell us what they think, and then we will digest it, and we could change it from the first reading to the second reading. Now you're offering an appeal process. It's like, where does it stop, I guess? Well, you have a valid point.
New information to me is when we speak tonight and we outline the policy, we state that there will be an appeals process. And when a member of the public asked a question, you know, appealing their case about their street, well, there will be an appeals process. That, to me, tells me that we should follow up and make it more formal. We're changing the policy. It hasn't been changed in a long time. We're introducing an appeals process. I think it should be a more formal appeals process. This isn't the appeals process. If you have an issue with anything in the school, you don't come to the board
right. And
make your appeal to the board because of your child's special considerations or your family considerations. That, in my opinion, initially should be a more private process.
Yeah, but isn't an appeal process form? You just said they come before the board on an appeal process.
No, I didn't say that. No. They come either before facilities and finance
or the committee.
Right, the committee, like they've done in the past.
Yes, okay.
I would say that my only concern with this is the timing in order to do the routes in a timely manner. So that's what I'm trying to think of here. Is there a way to do this?
Let me ask you a question.
By getting the routes done in a timely manner.
Mr. Malloy, is there something that would be in this appeals process that you're thinking you would object to that would change your opinion on the proposed second reading for tonight? Is there something that you fear will be in that so that we could guide it in that direction?
I don't know because we don't have one, unfortunately. We have a promise to have an appeals process, so I don't know if there'd be something in an appeals process that I'd find objectionable. But a first and second reading would allow me to have that look and maybe take a look at it. That's kind of the macro point I'm getting to. I'm not doubting that, you know.
Well, we can call special meetings then to get that first and second reading taken care of if we need to do that.
I'd be for that, you know, not to.
I'd also suggest that you should be a part of the creation of the appeals process.
I can do that if you like.
I think that would be a good idea.
Yeah.
Is this doable? I mean, is it time-wise doable even with a special meeting happening? We have to have two readings, right?
Well, look, I understand.
Have two readings,
I just
right?
don't know where we put a special meeting.
Well, it was.
We could do what we've done before, have like a Friday morning.
I think facilities and finance can probably approve a preliminary route within the specified time frame, as Mr. McTiernan stated, right? But if we can get it done beforehand and get a route sort of locked down before.
No, I don't think so, because then the route changes if we have an appeal process.
Well, the route would change if we had to appeal in December.
Right.
That was
so
successful
we
as well.
Well, we can't then.
Well,
we
why?
Can't
you can't tweak. I mean, how many times have we tweaked the route?
Exactly.
Well, what we were just saying, that we could tweak it with the appeals process as well, but that seems to be a problem, too. So might as well just wait until it's all done, right?
No. I think if we're going to pass a change, my personal opinion is that if we pass a change to a transportation policy, and if our board president stated tonight there should be an appeals process attended to said policy, that the framework of the appeal should be outlined within R8600. However, that's why we vote as a board. Realistically, guys, you could just vote it tonight, and to use a business term, SOL on my thought process. That's why there's nine of us.
But as a board, we should give consideration to what has some merit. I mean, again, Daniels has merit too, but
well, look, and again,
so Mr. Malloy, it's not going to change my vote, but
I also
to do the right thing and to dot the I's and cross the T's. I mean, we've come this far. Let's get it in totality. So I appreciate what you're saying on that aspect.
And editorially, I want to, this is, I have a great deal of respect for my fellow board members. I respect the decisions of that board. I fully support policy in place, even at the time I didn't vote for it, because that's what we do. And I think that a lot of work and effort went into this transportation policy, and I'm grateful. As I said at the last meeting, I'm grateful for the effort that went into this. This popped up, and I felt I would be remiss in this chair if I didn't bring it up to my fellow board members and the public's attention.
I just have a question for the board attorney. If the vote were postponed tonight to the June meeting, and let's say we could work a miracle, and sometime between now and the June meeting, put together an appeal process within the frameworks of the policy or the regulation. Do we need two readings on that? Or is that just an addendum or an adjustment to the policy based on the direction of the board?
Yeah, I think you could revise. You're not changing a ton of substance, you're adding a sentence or two.
So we would only need one more meeting then, not two.
To vote on it.
Right. Okay.
Can I just add something? I'm just throwing this out there. I know Dr. Clark sent out an email regarding attendance of the June meeting. I personally will not be here at the June meeting. I don't know, Kevin, if you'll be here, but I just want to make sure there's a quorum so that you can vote on it next month.
Kevin, will you be here at the June meeting?
Not at this point, no.
We did send out an email, and we did have a quorum at the time of the email. I don't know if that's changed.
Just double checking.
June 23rd.
So if I heard what you said correctly, we could vote on this as a second reading tonight and then have a...
I think Dr. Clark was saying postpone.
No, you would table it the second reading for tonight.
Yep.
And you would request that we revise the regulation or the policy to include some type of appeal process, and then you would vote on the second reading at the June meeting. Right, that would be the way to do it.
And this would be just an appeal process for transportation.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Can I also ask another question of the board attorney?
An extra meeting to add that line.
Right now I have a request at the table. Unless I'm mistaken, Mr. Sturgis, Mr. Vitoram, and Ms. McLaughlin must accept that request at the table. They don't have to, correct?
I think that's right.
So is the vote now on tabling it?
Yep.
Yeah.
Okay. Has it been yes that they're going to table it?
No.
It's been voted.
They have to vote on whether or not you want to accept Mr. Malloy's motion.
He offered the table. Mr. Sturgis said second, if I remember correctly. And now we'll vote on whether we table it or not.
No, just to...
Mr. Sturgis moved it.
Yeah.
Yes.
And Mrs. Verderamo seconded it.
Yes.
The question is...
No, to discuss.
The question is, do you accept the request to table it, Mr. Sturgis?
I'm going to throw him back at you. Can we have additional discussion on policy and curriculum relating to transportation once it's tabled? I have something else I want to touch on. Do we do that first, or do we vote to table it first?
You can discuss it first, please.
Okay. On a related topic, we've talked in policy and curriculum maybe twice. You might have touched on it, facilities and finance, recently about the concept of combining routes at two schools as a cost-saving measure. it had been suggested, do we want to look at it? It was Round Valley and CTMS. We talked about it a little bit, and it didn't move forward, primarily because of the disparity in the age of the kids, fourth grade, eighth grade, you know, 10 to 14, 9 to 13. It was too great of a disparity in age was the consensus, I thought. I have a similar opinion on preschool disabled. We talked about it here a little bit. We talked about it in committee a little bit.
Mr. Sturgis, I'm sorry, I have to interrupt. Is this related to any of the items in policy and curriculum that we're moving this evening?
Transportation policy.
Okay.
Is that okay?
I'm just curious, because you're giving a background, but are you going to propose additional changes to what's currently before us? Just for clarification purposes.
I don't think so at this point in time. It's possible, but I hadn't intended to.
Okay, well, if you're not proposing changes, I don't know if that's not something that we should then bring back to policy.
I have something to speak about relative to transportation policy. Is there a problem with me discussing it with the board?
Shouldn't that be done in committee to make a recommendation, because there's recommendations here for us to vote on now?
But this is more of a recommendation to another committee. I don't see any
problem.
Can
we do that in new business or old business?
If you insist, I think it's appropriate to speak about it now.
Just defer to the attorney and ask for opinion.
You can move it. If the board president would like to do it in new business or old business, it's fine. You can do that.
I mean, unless you want to add something to the policy, I'd recommend we move it to new business.
Whatever you prefer.
Okay. Let's move it to new business, please.
So the question now before the board is whether or not Mr. Sturgis and Mrs. Verderama, you accept to table the motion for the transportation policy and regulation only.
I accept.
Mrs. Verderama?
I don't accept.
Ms. Lord?
No, what happens?
What is the process?
That wasn't asked.
You got to ask me, Rachel.
Mrs. McLaughlin?
I'm not going to accept it.
Then it's not tabled.
So we move forward the motion as presented. Want me to do the roll call?
Roll call vote, please.
Mr. Freda?
Mr. Malloy made some good points, but yes.
Mrs. Hand?
Yes.
Mr. Malloy?
As respects 14 PC 038, no to 8600, yes to all others.
Mr. McTiernan?
Yes.
Mr. Petuto?
Yes.
Mr. Sturgis?
No to PC 038, 8600, yes to the balance.
Mrs. Verderamo?
Yes.
Mrs. McLaughlin?
Yes.
And Ms. Grant?
Yes.
Motion carries.
Moving on to the committee report for communications, Ms. Verderamo is our committee chair. Ms. Verderamo?
The communication committee has not met. I believe our next meeting is until August, but I'll be reaching out to Dr. Clark to see if maybe we can move that up a little bit.
She wants to add a communication meeting because not one is
not
ready
August,
for August.
So we can talk about it.
Okay. I
mean, we'll talk about it.
Okay, thank you. Moving on to old business, this portion.
We need to go back and revisit the personnel motion.
Oh, right. I'm looking for a motion for a short recess of 10 minutes, please.
Thank you.
Motion.
Second?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? 10-minute recess.
At 9, he has a recess.
I don't know.